This is the Inland Journal. I'm Doug Nadvornik. In November, the City of Spokane and Spokane School District are asking voters for a combined $572 million through two bond issues. The majority of that, $495 million, is for new and renovated schools, and we'll talk about that in the second half of this program. The other $77 million would go for new and renovated libraries, and that's what we're going to talk about in the first half. If you're listening to this program on the radio, you can call 1-800-328-5729, ask a question of or leave a comment for our guest. And if you're watching live on Facebook, you can leave us a question or a comment, and we may read some of those on the air this hour. Andrew Chance is with us. He's the City Library Director, the architect of this bond issue. So, Andrew, let's get to the, the details of this bond issue. What are you going to spend $77 million on?
Well, there's been a significant lack of funding for our libraries since they were first built in the 90s. We have a lot of originals in our buildings. We have original roofs and original HVACs, original carpets, and it costs a lot of money to upkeep those facilities. So that's part one. We really need safe facilities for the community. And part two is when these facilities were built, they were built around one concept, and that's the concept of a book. And the world has changed so much since these facilities were built nearly 30 years ago. Internet has changed our lives dramatically. So we really need to update our facilities to meet the literacy needs of today's citizens.
And how do you do that?
Well, multiple ways, really. Part of it is through increasing our technology, our Wi-Fi, and our internet points, increasing our computers. If you've been in our facilities, things as simple as tables. Our tables are really beautiful, heavy oak tables that are largely immovable. And you can't really gather around those tables to collaborate or share information or even plug in your devices. So we're looking at making updates around that. And then there's also the children's areas. When we were out doing our community engagement, updates to our children's areas were the number one priority of the citizens. When those children's areas were built, again, they were built around a book. They weren't built around actual child behavior. We know that kids can be loud in our facilities. They're kids being kids. So we want to get more functionality around the kids, more tactile learning avenues for them to learn and discover. And at the same time, we know that that energy that kids can bring to the facilities can often bring conflict with our other users. People sometimes go for quiet to our spaces, believe it or not. And one of the things that the facilities are lacking is quiet space. None of our facilities were built with quiet study rooms or small meeting rooms where people can have that space. I think that the library, people still look at the libraries as a sacred place, a place to contemplate, a place to do some research. And we're lacking that right now. So we'll be building more spaces like that so we can be a multi-purpose space for very diverse populations that we have in Spokane.
So to date myself, I worked in the old Spokane Public Library downtown where the library downtown is. I worked in the basement in the late 1970s.
Right.
And I remember big bound newspapers and putting them up on the lift and magazines and all that sort of stuff. I still remember the Shadle Park library in the old Shadle Center. So if I can remember those, how can you tell me that the current libraries are old? How old are they?
They're nearing their 30th birthday. So this bond measure, the original bond measure ran in the early 90s, and our newest branch was built in 1998, and that's Indian Trail. The rest were built in mid-90s. So this is the time for us to really look at the facilities, you know, take into account everything that's changed in the world and meet the needs of the community.
So let's get into some of the specifics in terms of you're looking at three new libraries and four renovated libraries. Can we go through those projects?
Sure. So four of those libraries that we're looking at are actually partnership libraries with Spokane Public Schools. where we're looking at some joint facility uses for the better building usage between the two organizations. Three of those libraries are actually in underserved neighborhoods. So we're looking at building a new library to replace the East Side Library that's located at the East Central Community Center. This is actually our smallest library. It's about 6,000 square feet. And we run into a lot of conflict at that library between multi-generational usage. Again, it's 6,000 square feet, so you can't do a whole lot with that space. So we're actually looking at moving it over to Liberty Park and doubling the size of that facility. What we find in our user data is that 50% of the population that lives in that area will actually travel a couple miles further to the South Hill facility because we can't offer the services that we need to offer in that community. We can offer more computers with more space. We can offer more events and more resources for the community. Really, the big things there is more intentional kid spaces and more functional spaces for our adults. The partnership aspect of this space is that it'll also house space for Spokane Virtual Learning, a choice option school for Spokane Public Schools. So it's going to give people, students and teachers and parents, better access to the resources that they need. On the other side of the highway of the I-90, we're looking at partnering with Spokane Public Schools just north of their Libby Center. Spokane Public Schools is interested in building a professional development center for their staff. So about a 250 space person space where they can do training. But they wouldn't utilize that all the time. So as we were going through our conversations, we don't serve the other side of I-90 directly north of the highway very well because we don't have space there. So what if we were to locate a library there and recognize that the I-90 is an actual barrier in our community and give some service over there? And when the school's not using the space for professional development, we can open up that space for events. We can open it up to the business community in a really revitalizing area of Spokane. The third partnership site that we're looking at is actually for our Hilliard Library. Hilliard Library is our second smallest library at about 8,000 square feet, and that is supposed to serve the entire population of District 1. District 1 is our highest population in the city, yet it has our second smallest facility. So as we were talking with the schools, they were looking to rebuild Shaw Middle School, and that's right across the street from Hilliard. So why not partner and do a joint use facility there where we can expand the footprint of Hilliard and offer some really modern 21st century services for that community? And then if you head over to Shadle, this is one of our busiest branches that we have in the community. Serves a very diverse population, grandparents taking their grandkids, parents taking their kids. It's just a very dynamic facility. So we're looking at expanding that space from about 18,000 square feet to about 30,000 square feet. What we're hoping to do there is actually create, it's more about that children's area, more about the spaces for adults, but it also serves as a north side location for Spokane Virtual Learning with Spokane Public Schools. Again, creating convenience for the community to get the students where they need to get to. Over the past few years, we've had an informal relationship with Spokane Public Schools where this partnership, we've seen their outcomes increase by this partnership of housing some of their services at the library. One of the really unique things about the Shadle Library, too, is it'll have some partnership spaces that can serve as a place where we can really serve as an incubator for community organizations, community groups, just by the presence of our space. And when with Indian Trail and our South Hill libraries, we're looking at some minor revisions to those spaces. Again, it's improving the kid spaces, improving the adult spaces, adding some group study rooms to cut down on some of the conflict that we see there. And in those spaces, we really want to expand the meeting room presence that we have there. Our public attendance for our programs has really increased over the past year. In fact, it's about up 90% over the past year. So we know that we are at max capacity for those type of events. And our downtown facility, it's probably going to be the most dramatic of our redos. If you've been on the first floor of the downtown library, you'll notice that the only public space on that first floor off Main Street is the two public meeting rooms, which are heavily used. Well, over the years, as the world has changed, our need for staff space has dramatically changed. So we're looking at giving that space to the public, creating spaces like a makerspace, a music recording studio, spaces for a small business and entrepreneurial space, places for people to gather, and also create a better connection to Spokane Falls. There's a big public plaza that's being built right in our back door at the Spokane Public Library. And to create that connection and have the library be that gateway from Main Street to the falls and back and forth, I think would be something really great for the community.
Our guest is Andrew Chance, City Library Director of Spokane City. If you have a question for him regarding the bond issue, 328-5729, or leave a message on our Facebook page, Spokane Public Radio Facebook page. So one of the themes that is rolling through this is you're doing a lot of stuff with the Spokane Public Schools. How does this fit? I mean, in terms of is this increasing that opportunity with the public schools with the new projects here, both bond issues, the school library and the library bond issue?
Yeah, I think it builds on a partnership that we've been able to develop over the past few years. One of the things that we recently did is we gave every student at Spokane Public Schools a library card that's fine free. It includes their staff, includes their teachers. And the reason I bring that up is because both organizations are about education. You know, Spokane Public Library is about being a community of learning. And when you partner the library and the school, it's not just about the kids. Now it's about birth to seniors. It's the entire spectrum of the community that we're able to have a better income on or impact on. When you look at, you know, joint use facilities, you realize some efficiencies too, you know, shared parking, shared bills for electricity and things like that, that will really be a good thing for the taxpayer.
So let's talk about the finances of it. $77 million for on a Spokane scale, any other year would be a huge lift. But when you consider $495 million for the school bond issue, it becomes kind of a piker, sort of a, in comparison. But tell us about how does this affect the current tax structure that we pay for libraries?
So we're actually in a unique situation right now. And I tend to think of this as a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity. We started talking with the schools about 10 months ago about how we can build a better partnership. And knowing that from the McCleary decision, which is a decision for the state needs to fully fund education, we know that as a result of that, our tax rate will go down in Spokane by $2.20 per thousand for assessed valuation.
So, what is it now for a little context? Somewhere in the $4 range, I think.
For the schools, I believe they went down locally from around $3.80 down to $1.50, somewhere in there, there's the state tax. I don't have the figures in front of me for that right now, but when the school's on, they can probably explain it more in detail. But with the citizens seeing a relief of $2.20 per thousand, between the schools and the libraries together, we're looking at 98 cents of that capacity, which leaves $1.22 right in the pocket of the citizens per thousand. How often can you say that? You know, we're gonna improve our schools, we're gonna improve our libraries, and you still get a savings as a result of this. And it's just a very unique situation. And for us to go out together and try to figure out how to do things in a more economical way, that's going to have an even greater impact than us just going out separately. I think that resonates with the public as well.
So tell me the sort of the backstory a little bit about how the how this whole partnership between the two bond issues came about.
That really started a couple years ago. The school has been looking for land for their facilities, and they started talking with the city of Spokane. City of Spokane is one of the largest landholders in the city. So as they were looking at different properties, this actually started with the Foothills property, where they're going to be hopefully building a middle school. So it's just been a partnership that's been brewing, you know, between the city of Spokane and Spokane Public Schools. And we've been really trying to build that partnership just on a programmatic level between the libraries and schools.
And so how long have you been hatching the library idea that is now on the ballot?
Well, we've been out talking with the community since 2014, 2015. We did a lot of community engagement around what is needed, what does the public want with their libraries. And we did another round of communication this year, where we met with over 45 groups, had contact with thousands of citizens around what they wanted for their facilities in the future.
Okay, it's 6:22. We're with Andrew Chance from the Spokane City Library. So in terms of the requirements that you need in order to be able to pass a bond issue like this, it's a little special. It's a little more than just a 50-50 thing.
Yeah, so it's 60% approval that we would need for this measure.
So as you've gone out, what are the concerns that you're hearing about this?
You know, we haven't heard a whole lot of concerns on the library side. It's been very positive. Right now, we're speaking with various community groups, neighborhood councils, and it's been positive. Some of the comments that we've heard is, it's about time. So I think that people recognize the need for us to update the facilities, and they've also really expressed their happiness with the service that we've been able to deliver over the past couple of years. So I think it's really an expectation at this point.
You also have a validation requirement, as you often do in bond issues. What is that? It's like 40% of?
I think it's from the last general.
From the last general election. So that would be 2016, which was a fairly heavy election.
Yeah.
Do you worry about that turnout?
I think we're going to have pretty good turnout this year as well.
Just because of all the things that are going
on? I mean,
on.
Just nationally. I mean, I think that people are engaged. Either you want to keep everything how it's currently going, or you want to see some change. So I think that's going to bring some good turnout.
So in terms of the changes in libraries, I noticed from the time that, you know, I was younger, where there are a lot fewer books now. Is my perception correct? Is it more now online and fewer books?
Yeah, I mean, when you look at the physical collection, we have less. But when you incorporate the downloadable materials that we have and the databases that we have, our collection's bigger than when it was just a physical collection. And part of this bond as well is to invest another $2 million in the collection, and that will include both physical and digital elements as well.
So my wife works in the county library district, and it's kind of an ongoing evolution to kind of keep up with all of this sort of stuff. What is it like for your staff to try to, you know, what are the latest things that they've got to keep up with?
You know, I think a good mantra to have in libraries is to get comfortable with being uncomfortable, because it's part of our job to keep up with changes. I mean, technology is constantly changing. People's needs are constantly changing. People come to us for, you know, government information. They come to us for technology help. They come to us for, you know, the latest book on the New York Times bestseller. So, you know, we have to be pretty nimble because we have no idea what people are going to come in and ask us or call us up and ask. Just be ready. That's been our plan. Just be ready, be open, and help out as much as we can.
So you worked in library systems in other parts of the country. Is it common that now libraries are partnering with other entities to be able to sort of maximize what they can do for their communities?
I think it's becoming more common. Developing partnerships has definitely been a focus of Spokane Public Library for the past 5 years. We've developed a partnership with Community Court to really deliver information to folks that are going through the court systems. A lot of those folks have housing issues. So I think in order for libraries to be vibrant and to remain relevant in their communities, they have to find those partners where we can continue to meet people where they're at.
And are you finding more and more use of your room, your space facilities?
Yes. That's been our biggest area of growth, actually, is around our programs, our meeting room usage. Our circulation has remained, pretty much the same. But I think as the world gets more and more digital, people crave that in-person interaction. And that's something that the library can provide for the community.
And are you finding that you talked about sort of the multi-generational thing at Shadle. Are you finding that in other places as well?
Definitely. Where else can you go that you're not going to have to buy something and you can have a good experience with your grandkid or with your friend? And you get something out of it too, because you can check something out or you can use something that we have in the building.
Well, I think you mentioned it, the free facilities. You can take your kids and get free entertainment there or, free books and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah, one of the biggest things that, we've had is, popularity-wise, is our Sunday hours at Shadle and South Hill. Big multi-generational day for us. The grandparents taking their grandkids in, playing games, reading books to, each other. It's a pretty special thing to see.
It used to be there were limitations on the hours because of budgetary constraints. How have those changed over the years?
Well, in 2013, the voters approved a levy to increase our operational hours, and we used that to increase hours at Hilliard and Eastside and Indian Trail. It's been a very popular decision based on our usage. And we've been able to, that's how we added our Sunday hours too. It wasn't something that was promised, but it's just something extra that we could give to the community.
Andrew Chance is the City of Spokane's Library Director. The $77 million bond issue will be on the November 6th ballot, and it will be accompanied by, for most Spokane City voters at least, a $495 million bond issue, and we'll talk about that in a few minutes. You're listening to Inland Journal on Spokane Public Radio.
It is now 6:28. We will continue after headline news from NPR. Support for Spokane Public Radio comes from Camera Corral, offering camera sales, custom printing from film and digital media, and photo restoration now at their new location, Suite 109 Harbor Plaza, Northwest Boulevard in Coeur d'Alene. We also receive support from the Allen and Merle Roy Endowment Fund at Innovia Foundation in support of Spokane Public Radio news programming. And WorkSource Washington. WorkSource helps thousands of businesses each year look for and hire the right talent. Details at WorkSourceWA.com. Coming up at 7 on KPBX, the concert of the week. At 9 o'clock for you tonight, we have This American Life. And Jan Munstead will be here at 10 o'clock with jazz for a Monday night. On KSFC tonight, Fresh Air at 7, As It Happens at 8 o'clock. Tonight at 9, Native America Calling, Commonwealth Club at 10. And we go to the BBC World Service tonight at 11. That's on KSFC. We're in the final week of summertime. It's starting off dry and a bit cooler than average. We'll see some chilly morning temperatures with patchy frost possible in the sheltered valleys. Toward the end of the week, we could see another series of widespread showers around the region. The weather will remain cool over the weekend with a chance for mountain showers. Currently in downtown Spokane, it is 63 degrees here at Spokane Public Radio.
I'm Dwayne Brown. Supreme Court nominee Brett Kavanaugh and Christine Ford, the woman accusing him of sexual assault, will both appear before the Senate Judiciary Committee next week. NPR's Scott Detrow has more from Capitol Hill.
The Judiciary Committee had been scheduled to vote on Kavanaugh's nomination later this week. Christine Blasey Ford's accusation that Kavanaugh assaulted her at a party when the two were in high school has changed that. Kavanaugh denies the allegation. Initially, Majority Leader Mitch McConnell and other top Senate Republicans balked at the idea of holding a new hearing, but several Republicans like Susan Collins of Maine have demanded one.
I believe that it's very important that both Professor Ford and Judge Kavanaugh testify under oath about these allegations.
After Kavanaugh's week-long confirmation hearing, his appointment to the Supreme Court looked like a done deal. Now he, the Senate, and Ford face a replay of the infamous 1991 Clarence Thomas confirmation hearings. Scott Detrow, NPR News, The Capitol.
Search and rescue operations continue several days after Florence made landfall in North Carolina. At least 31 deaths are being blamed on the former hurricane. Sheriff Eddie Cathy was leading a rescue team in Union County when floodwater swept a vehicle with a mother and child off the road and into some trees.
She was able to free herself from the vehicle as well as the child. And when she was trying to get out of the water, she lost control of the child.
He says the child's body was found close to where the car came to a rest. Meanwhile, the pounding rains have slowed, but rivers are quietly rising, swamping low-lying hog farms. That's raising pollution concerns as the swollen waterways approach their crests, endangering homes and structures. Stocks finished lower on Wall Street today. You're listening to NPR News. 1 week ahead of Bill Cosby's criminal sentencing, his wife has filed a formal complaint against the judge who presided over a sexual assault trial. A jury convicted Cosby back in April of 3 counts of aggravated indecent assault. From member station WHYY, Laura Benshoff reports.
Camille Cosby went to the state capitol to file a complaint about Judge Stephen O'Neill with Pennsylvania's Judicial Conduct Board. Andrew Wyatt, a spokesperson for the Cosby family, says the gist is that O'Neill was biased against a key pretrial witness.
Judge O'Neill misrepresented the bench, and he used unethical practices to help get Mr. Cosby convicted.
Camille Cosby's accusations echo a defense filing last week, asking the judge to recuse himself. The current DA says these claims are a spurious attempt by Cosby's legal team to avoid, quote, a long overdue day of reckoning. For NPR News, I'm Laura Benshoff in Philadelphia.
Amazon says it's investigating allegations that some of its employees may be taking bribes from sellers on its website. The Wall Street Journal reports some independent sellers are suspected of making payments ranging from $80 to $2,000 in order to get internal sales metrics or to get negative reviews deleted to gain an advantage on Amazon's marketplace. The Journal reports the practice is particularly pronounced in China. You're listening to NPR News.
This is a special Inland Journal from Spokane Public Radio. I'm Doug Nadvornik. Hello also to our viewers watching on Facebook Live. If you have a question or comment this half hour, you can call us at 328-5729, or you can leave a message for us on the Spokane Public Radio Facebook page. We've talked about libraries, and now we turn our attention to new and renovated schools. On November 6th, patrons in the Spokane School District will be asked to approve a $495 million bond issue. The centerpiece are three middle schools, in addition to three replacement middle schools and a new sports stadium and a long list of other projects, which we'll get to in a matter of seconds here. Joining us in our studio, Superintendent Shelley Redinger and Associate Superintendent Mark Anderson to talk about, well, let's start, Mark, with the list of things. It's a pretty long list of projects. So how many of these can you remember off the top of your head?
So we in this particular bond, are proposing three new middle schools and then replacing our three oldest middle schools, Sacagawea, Shaw, and Glover. And then in addition to that, Lewis and Clark High School, we actually are doing a planned an 8-classroom addition out of the 2015 bond, but they finally have decided, given safety and security, that they too need a cafeteria. Commons LC's had a tradition of not having that. So we have designed that in. So the commons or the cafeteria will be on this particular bond. And then in addition, we have the stadium in order to build a new additional middle school on the northwest side of town. We need to downsize the old Joe Albee. It's reached the end of its useful life, and either build a 5,000-seat stadium there. We can talk about the city's put an advisory vote on whether to build it downtown. Same amount of money for us. Our big goal is to build a middle school, a new middle school out in the Northwest. And then technology is the way we have always funded our technology out of the bonds, or that's components there. Safety and security is another component that we've used bond dollars. And then finally, what I call the chicken in every pot, every school gets a little something out of the bond to keep their school up. Could be a new playground equipment, new roof, boiler, those sort of things. So that's, in general, kind of the long list that we would do over 6 years, from 2018 to 2024.
So is this kind of the natural time for a bond issue, or is this sort of kind of in the middle of your cycle?
Well, we are accelerating the bond cycle, so we were supposed to run the next bond in 2021. However, we thought, given escalating construction costs as well as a current reduction in tax rates, that this would be a good time to do it. In addition, we want to move our sixth graders to our middle schools as we move to a 6-8 model to relieve overcrowding at our elementary schools.
So let's get to that in a minute, but I just wanted, you were talking about the three new middle schools. Where will those be placed?
So that's the unique part about this particular bond, is that we have partnered with the city not only on libraries, which Andrew probably spoke about in the prior half hour, but also on land. The city is the biggest landowner in Spokane, and as we started looking for 15 to 16 acre plots to put a new middle school, really the city has the most available property in the right location and unused city property. So, for example, the one new middle school for the Northeast, that they have a 16 acres right on Foothills Drive, right across from G Prep, that has dirt piles on it right now, not used very effectively. And they have a spot up on the South Hill that is unused, perfect for a South Hill, new South Hill. And then they still own Albee. We own the parking lot, but we can't build on the parking lot until we make Albee much smaller due to parking restrictions. So that's the unique part of this partnership, is that the city is bringing their assets to the table at no cost to citizens. Citizens already paid for that property once. Why should they, we've thought, sell it to us and then us charge the citizens again? So that's part of this partnership that makes it a good approach for efficiency for taxpayers' dollars.
So it's free. There's no rental charge from the city like that. Okay.
Right.
All right. So let's then talk sort of lost my train of thought, because I'm looking at your city of Spokane map there, and you're talking about facilities pretty much all around in each of the three city council districts. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm. So combined with the libraries and our schools, it would touch every part of the city. Correct.
So what's the financial situation here? We're talking about $495 million in bonds, and yet at the same time you're talking about property taxes going down. How does that work?
So this is part of the McCleary decision for the state more fully funding basic education. And the McCleary family, as you know, sued the state and prevailed, and the Supreme Court has kind of kept the state, the legislature's feet to the fire to fully fund it. This past session, they finally made the change in the funding sources so that the state is now taking over more of the funding, or most of the funding, for basic education, and limiting what local school districts can collect for educational programs out of their levies. Ours dropped from $4 per thousand to $1.50 per thousand. Now, the state had a state property tax increase to help pay for part of their obligation, but the two combined, starting in January, Spokane will be fortunate to have a $2.20 per thousand tax rate reduction. And the two measures we're talking about, the libraries and the schools, is a 98 cents investment of that $2.20 drop, and the remaining $1.22 would remain as a tax rate reduction for our local taxpayers. Now, that's not true across the state. Mm-hmm. As Shelley knows, in visiting with her colleagues across in Puget Sound, their taxes have gone up to kind of balance out this appropriate funding of basic education.
So give me a quick explanation. Why did it work that way?
It was what was called more of a levy swap. Mm-hmm. So for years, our taxpayers have been paying more than their fair share towards basic education just because of the property values, mm-hmm. assessed values. And so that was what the McCleary decision was about as well, is if the responsibility of education is the state, why were some areas of the state paying much more for basic education? So that's what it entails. So the state is trying to right-size that and to give our taxpayers on this side of the state a bit of a break.
So to go back to, I guess, that issue of 3 years early in terms mm-hmm. of the next bond issue, you decided that this was probably the right time to take advantage of that then?
Well, and part of it is, too, as we were doing our calculations, it will add about $100 million with escalation costs. And so that was a very concerning as well. The longer we wait, the more expensive these projects will be. And so that really weighed into the decision as well.
So how long has the school district been talking with the city about this? Has this been a kind of a long-standing sort of problem or issue?
So we've actually been talking to the city about the Foothills property for 5 years, but it's just during the last year that we started looking, is there a way for us to partner and basically not charge taxpayers twice for the same piece of property that taxpayers have already paid for? And so the process of looking at the partnership and what would it be, and then along came the libraries wanting to, you know, renovate their libraries, where we could actually, you know, put some of our option programs in libraries as well as let some of the libraries be built on school district land. It kind of really kind of gelled by about May of this year.
So there are other cities in where local governments and schools are pretty much tied together. I mean, the school districts are run under the city. In the state of Washington, is this kind of an unusual situation, or is this common?
We would be one of the first in Washington for a city and a school district to partner like this. You're right. In some states and in some cities, big cities, the city runs the school system. But in Washington, school districts are all independently run by school boards. Yeah.
So on your promotional material here, you talk about the $495 million bond, but also a state match of about $58 million. Where does that come in?
So the state will match about a third of the cost of construction for schools that are replacements. So for Sacagawea, Glover, and Shaw, since those three schools are being replaced on their same sites with new schools, the state will pay about a third of the cost, and it equals that dollar amount that would come to Spokane in addition to what Spokane taxpayers would pay.
So this is like, what, an additional school and a half or two?
That's it is.
From Spokane.
From the state.
So you've built Salk, which is in northwest Spokane, on a different part of that lot. Would
Correct.
You do the same thing with those replacement middle
yep.
schools?
The thought would be to follow a similar model.
Yeah.
We found that really is beneficial for student learning. It doesn't disrupt the learning as much. When you're doing something like rebuilding while the students are in, you're having to move classes constantly. It's very disruptive to the learning environment. So that would be the thought, to site it possibly in a little bit different location and then allow for that.
You're doing that in the Linwood School up in the north end
yep.
right
yeah.
now, where you're building on the other end of the...
Correct.
So we're talking with Shelley Redinger and Mark Anderson from the Spokane School District about the $495 million school bond. So let's go back to this idea of moving sixth grade out of the elementary schools and back into the middle schools. Over the years, different districts have sort of done it different ways. Why was Spokane doing this?
Sure. Well, we had a lot of engagement of stakeholders, families, teachers, other staff members, community leaders, to look at our models, the different models. And really, the research showed that it was much better to move to that 6-8 model.
Okay, so we've got a question. Pete, can we go to the phones here? I think we've got a call regarding Albee Stadium and that issue. So I'll have you, Mark and Shelley, slip on your headphones there so you can hear the caller. Hello, you're on the radio with Mark and Shelley.
Thank you. Thank you so much for taking my call. I live in the Arlington School District or area here in Morgan Acres, and they are proposing more apartment living, and we also have the whole area in that Bluegrass Estates and all of that clear over to Nevada that are all being pushed into Arlington School, which is now splitting at the seams. I really kind of would have a very hard time voting for this bond with the idea that we really need to have Albee rebuilt.
So for Arlington, you are right. They are bursting at the seams. We actually plan to do two things to help relieve Arlington. The first is the new Linwood, which is the neighboring school to the west. It's being built it's going to be one of our larger facility elementary schools. We do plan to adjust the boundary line between Arlington and Linwood so that more students will fill up Linwood and relieve Arlington. And then the second is for the middle schools. By building a third middle school both on the northwest at Albee as well as on the northeast at Foothills, we will be able to move the sixth graders out of the entire north side, which will again provide more relief for Arlington Elementary.
Sure. Okay. Well, good. Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you. Mm-hmm. So 328-5729 if you have questions for Shelley and for Mark. They're here for another 12 or 13 minutes or so. So let's get to the issue then of Albee Stadium. Mm-hmm. And what are you going to do with that? Because When the school board held its joint meeting on August 1st with the Spokane City Council, you held sort of a public hearing, and the overwhelming majority of comments came to, what are you going to do with Albee? And that question of, is it going to stay where it is, or are you going to move it downtown? So let's talk about that decision.
So we have money in our bond to replace a stadium with a multi-use facility. Albee's reached the end of its useful life, and we need to make it smaller, 5,000 seats, in order to build that middle school that we need on the northwest. The city did come to us and say, if we're going to spend that much money to downsize Albee, pretty much rebuild it.
And how much are we talking about?
About $31
million. Okay.
So it's about half the amount of what it takes to build a middle school. Is that the best place for our schools and travel to them, as well as is that the best place for the kinds of opportunities that could evolve with a stadium downtown? So we started visiting with the Public Facility District, who owns the land on the North Bank next to the arena. And so the option of looking at building it downtown with the PFD running it for the school district and then offering more events than just school events became a question that we finally decided, that the city decided, let's ask the voters. And so what you see on the ballot is a third measure it's an advisory vote of, would you prefer to have the stadium, a smaller stadium built at the current site, or would you prefer to have a stadium built downtown?
Okay, so our next phone caller, I think, is asking about that as well. Hello, you're on with Mark Anderson and Shelley Redinger.
Oh, great. Thanks for taking the call. Been in town 22 years now. And every single time a levy comes up, our property taxes go up $200 a year, approximately. We're at $3,300, $3,400 now. We just paid not that long ago to re-turf Joe Albee. Abandoning that and going downtown or another location seems prohibitive to me with the school teacher raises that are happening right now that are going to have to be paid for out of some pile. The new buildings do need to happen at SAC and Salk and I think other one that needs to be replaced. That's true. But can't you just scratch that stadium with CTE on the run? Everybody recognizes CTE with head injuries with football now. Can't we just phase that out and say, hey, we're not, if it's all about the kids, all about the kids isn't dementia. I have a real problem with that stadium cost being lumped into this $495 million that we're talking about as if, oh, that's not a big deal. You know, we'll just absorb it up. It's not a new levy. It's just a replacement levy. A replacement levy is a new levy. So when are we going to rein this in? When is it going to stop where when you're on a fixed income, you can't just keep paying $300 extra every time a levy comes up because somebody can't say no?
Well, let's give Mark Anderson a chance to have a whack at your question here.
First of all, a few facts. You're correct. We did put turf into Albee, the school district did. That was 15 years ago, so we've been able to get quite a bit of useful life out of the turf. As far as the taxes are concerned, this is a unique opportunity. You are correct that that taxes have gone up or your assessed property value on your home has gone up. This particular measure, due to the state taking more of the funding for basic education, tax rates in Spokane for schools will drop $2.20. Now, that isn't the same as what your assessed property value. If your assessed property value is increasing quite significantly, then it may not be a reduction of taxes. It could be close to the same. So as far as Albia is concerned, we're trying to build a multi-use stadium, not just for football, for soccer, for rugby, for all sorts of other kinds of field sports, so that it's multi-use for our students. So if football goes away down the road, it'll be used for other kinds of outdoor activities.
So he raised the question of, we're talking $30 million for a stadium. Is that too much? Why 5,000 seats? Why did you choose, mm-hmm. Why did you choose that size? Why did you choose $30 million?
So two reasons. One, we did cost estimates on what it would take to do a 5,000-seat stadium. 5,000 seat is just about right for some of our larger events that we have, as well as tournaments that for the east side, to bring tournaments here versus our kids having to travel for tournaments. So it's about a right size kind of size for a high school type field. Me is building one that's about 4,000. They have just two high schools. We have five. So we felt it was the right size for our community.
So one of the young men who spoke at the hearing that I was referencing a little earlier talked about this idea of having the football stadiums that are at the schools right now serve as the homes, the hubs for football games rather than having a central stadium. Why not that?
So we looked into that because there is a lot of school spirit that's really cool to have when you have a stadium at each school. However, when we looked at prices, that really escalated the price point in terms of having to keep up a field, especially if you did a turf field, for example, the amount of use it would have at each high school. And also a couple of our high schools, it would be very difficult to do to add lights and parking. Think of North Central, think of Hartfield. It would be very difficult in those two spots. So we thought the more equitable idea would be to keep one for a district our size to just have one stadium would be more cost effective.
Does the school district have a position on which of the two sites you would like?
No, I think that's why we basically kind of left it up to voters. From a practical standpoint, just the pros and cons, the central stadium for our schools on the North Bank is less travel time and would provide more, opportunity for folks to come and participate. Number two, it would probably get more use. If folks are looking for a multi-use stadium with the arena or with the PFD running it, it's going to get more use than a stadium way out on the west side of the district. On the con, it's more complicated. And everybody always has the question about parking. And PFD is committed that the parking would be free. The pro of just downsizing Albie, it's less complicated. We can just do it, on our own. It's on our land. And so it makes it may not be used as much as one downtown, but it certainly would fulfill our needs. So those are the pros and cons of each.
So how would you do it? Would you knock the current stadium down and just build from scratch?
So that is another kind of replacing the current Albie. It's more complicated on construction. We would have to take down one site at a time and rebuild the one side, then take down the other side, down to the berms, if you've ever been out there. And
so would you stay with the berms?
What's that?
Would you stay with the
berms?
Down
to the berm, right.
Okay.
Right. So that's our initial analysis. It would take probably 3 years to redo it for us to be able to continue to play there during the fall while we're building. So it's more complicated to build it at Albie. Yeah.
So the one thing we heard, and we heard a lot from people who use those stadiums or want to use those stadiums, is that lacrosse, which has traditionally been a sport that's been an Eastern sport and has sort of made its way to the West, is becoming more and more popular, or at least gaining a foothold here. Do you anticipate lacrosse becoming a part of the scholastic sports for Spokane Public Schools?
Well, I do know, I'm from Spokane, so I came back home. But when I was in Virginia, very popular lacrosse. And I know we have quite a few families that have moved here from the East Coast, and it is very big there. So there are a number of clubs, and they are looking at the GSL of how they can become one of the sports choices. And I think as we're looking at some things happening with football, you could see the reentry of even more soccer and lacrosse. Mark mentioned rugby, but I actually think, you know, lacrosse is what we're hearing a little bit more. Mm-hmm. And so also with the Joe Albey site, the thought is if we do move the stadium, where the stadium was going to be, the thought would be the city wanted to put in more soccer fields and lacrosse fields. So that option also.
The Merkel facility over on the west side.
It allows the Merkel facility to expand.
So we've got just a couple of minutes left. If you want to get in one last phone call to 328-5729 with Mark Anderson and Shelley Redinger. In terms of this, you've got a more than a 50%. Is it more than 50%? It used to be two-thirds in Idaho. It's still 60%
in Washington.
And there's a validation requirement as well. So how many votes roughly would you need? Your 40%
of... It's 40% of who turned out in the last general election. I think with this election, we won't have any problem.
You're not worried then about validation or anything like that?
Certainly the 60% is a higher level mark.
So what are you hearing from the community around that? I mean, you're talking about nearly $500 million in layout here. What are people saying?
Well, we're hearing a lot of excitement about the new facilities, and those students and families that go to our current middle schools really like the idea of having new middle schools and also fewer transitions, having the 6, 7, 8 so we can really build community and rethink how we do middle school and really be innovative in what our middle schools look like. Also, it allows us to really downsize class sizes at the elementaries as we become K-5. So I think there's a lot of excitement about that, really a lot of excitement about the libraries and the joint use and the partnership there.
Cost isn't a big factor this time around?
Well, you know, it is a large amount of money, but when I think people see how we're partnering with the library to co-share land, because land can be very expensive to purchase, and sharing facilities, that there's just a lot of excitement about that.
Shelley Redinger is the superintendent of Spokane Public Schools. Mark Anderson is the associate superintendent. He's the guy who is the financial guy for the district. The district's $495 million bond issue will appear on the November 6th ballot. Tonight's broadcast was a team effort. We want to thank Peter Glarborg and Nisha Schramm-Krosen, Chris Messini, Kathy Sacken, and Jerry Olson for their help tonight. Inland Journal will return to its usual time on Thursday. That's noon here on KPBX, 3 p.m. on KSFC. If you missed the radio version of the program, this program tonight, you can go to SpokanePublicRadio.org and listen online. We'll have that up later on this evening. Thank you for listening and being engaged in tonight's program. I'm Doug Nadvornik.